Our theme today is navigating the complexities of the drug class of trade, challenges and solutions for health, beauty, and personal care brands. And it's like, look, this year, I think the retail landscape in general and the drug channel, for some of its own particular reasons, which we'll discuss, are really looking to ways to drive foot traffic, differentiate, and stay relevant with shoppers. The U.S. drug channel is facing a bunch of different headwinds that are putting some pressure on sales and margins. It's been highly impacted by post-COVID changing consumer habits and preferences, economic and inflationary pressures, labor shortages, which obviously then contribute to the ongoing challenge that all retail has with both organized and disorganized retail crime, online pharmacy disruptors, and then the ongoing challenge in that is so acute to the drug channel of reimbursement rates in the pharmacy side of the business, which dramatically impact the economics of the non-pharmacy side. It's an incredibly complicated environment, highly subject to vagaries of regulation and government influence, as well as a whole range of factors in the private healthcare system that are a really big deal. So I'm your host, Brian Gildenberg, the founder and CEO of Confluence Commerce and a content partner of MPG. And what I'm really going to do is I'm going to turn this over to my four panelists today to tackle this topic. And we'll let you all introduce yourselves. And Jason, I'm going to start with you first. So.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Good morning. So Jason Henney, I lead the drug channel, Canadian market, and DIY channel for MPG. Thanks for hosting this today. I appreciate it.
Sherry, over to you.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm Sherry Saffert. I am a retailer by passion and history. I've spent 14 years of my career at CVS Health and happy to be here with everyone today.
Excellent. Bill, how about you?
Sure. Bill Bergen. I've been with MPG about 5 years. Prior to that, I spent 40 years in the drug class of trade. The last 20 with Rite Aid, where I ran their health and beauty divisions. And for about half my tenure there, I ran the Rite Aid brand.
All right. And then Luke, how about you?
Luke Rauch, recently chief merchant at Walgreens. Was at Walgreens for 9 years, largely in the merchandising function. Looking forward to the conversation today.
Well, if only we had leaders that had run a significant chunk of the merchandising at Rite Aid, Walgreens, and CVS, we might have some informed opinions on this topic. So this is going to be good. So I think we'll just start with a general thing, and I'm going to ask each one of you to pick a trend that that you think is most important to the drug channel. Jason, since you're MPG's hosting this podcast, you get to start. But just pick one trend that you think is most important in the for the drug channel retailers and the brands trying to manage and grow their business in drug as we look at 2024.
Yeah, so Brian, I think from a front end trend standpoint, the headwinds that came this year with the cough cold category and the impact that that had across all other categories from a basket standpoint has been pretty significant and a significant challenge for both the retailers and the manufacturers in the space.
Excellent. Sherry, how about you?
Yeah, I would say just the consumer and the ever-changing consumer in this space and their focus really around health, wellness, self-care, and not just when they're sick. It's really about proactive, preventative self-care. And the drug channel serves well in this space.
So we've got one negative trend and one positive trend. Bill, up to how about you? Where you a glass half empty or a glass half full kind of guy here?
A little bit of both. So I would expound on what Jason said around the decrease in trips, and I think what that has done is had the drug chains focus a lot of their resources on services and pharmacy, and rightfully so, it's the lion's share of their business. But I think to the resources they're putting against that, what we're seeing is maybe coming against some of the front end categories. If you look at how they're becoming more efficient with the way they manage their front end, where they're closing stores, they're touching planograms every other year as opposed to once a year, looking at SKU rationalization and things of that nature, that while positively impacting pharmacy and services piece is having, creating some challenges for the front ends, I would say. So I'm a half full on each side because it's boding well for the pharmacy component of their business, but maybe not so much the front end.
Look at you bringing everybody together. So, Luke, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to be glass half empty. I don't think this is a new challenge, but I think in context of where the customer's mindset is, the continued encroachment on the convenience model by other retailers, the drug channel is behind on digital and omni. And I think as customers are more conscientious about their wallet, how much they're spending, and they can find alternatives in big box retail and otherwise where they can save a penny but not really give up the convenience that they were looking for, that's a big trend that I think continues to pose a headwind on the drug channel, specifically in the context of what Jason said. So I still think drug channel will always continue to win when people are sick and they need to come into a store and buy an over-the-counter medicine or what have you. But when sickness abates, which is good for all of us, that there's fewer people sick this year, when that lessens and you have the continued convergence and convenience, that's a really challenging environment for drug retailers.
Yeah, I think, and I would, Luke, probably build on yours as to me, and we'll get to this a little bit later, one of the untapped opportunities is in drug, because I really do think that particularly in the front end side of the drug business, and Luke, I've heard you talk about this in your former life really articulately, which is that the drug channel is an interesting combination of a healthcare destination outlet and, in essence, an urban convenience store. I've had a running conversation with people running drug businesses for years, looking at this when I was kind of in the middle between the suppliers and the retailers on this, which is like, I'm not entirely sure that on the front end of the business that the drug stores don't make more money from stores people walk to than stores people drive to. And that the nature of that business as a convenience thing is interesting. The challenge, of course, then comes that urban retail right now is a very, very complicated ecosystem. And that's, you've got, Bill, some of the cost pressure that you were talking about on the pharmacy side of things is leading urban stores in particular to be to have a high degree of executional complexity associated with them. Let's just put it that way. You've got product under lockup. If you go on Instagram for 5 minutes, you'll go and see somebody pointing a camera at some store somewhere that's got a wide range of products that are locked up. Organized and disorganized retail crime continues to be a very interesting challenge. So I think drugs got a really interesting opportunity to win in urban retail, but it's a very complicated ecosystem. So,
and Brian, maybe just to build on that, to be maybe glass three quarters full, the trend that I highlighted, I think, is a headwind for the drug channel in the near term, but there are paths to victory here for the drug channel in the medium term. Drugs still has more points of distribution than big box and grocery stores. They're still closer to the end consumer. So I think if the drug channel retailers can crack the nut on how to capitalize on that, there's a path to winning again. It's just in the near term with the headwinds on cost and the headwinds on traffic from acute, the next year, 18 months, I think is going to continue to be challenging.
And if I could just build a bit on that too, the healthcare equity that the drug channel has, the consumers trust the drug stores, and they're coming in, their trips are around, whether it's pharmacy, whether it's the services they provide and the OTC, that clearly is driving a differentiation for them. And they're also very strong in beauty and personal care. And those are very valuable consumers and trips that, again, drug is very good at attracting. And as millennials continue to shop, they're looking for that health care equity, education, and things of that nature. And they're very valuable to a drug consumer or a drugstore outlet to begin with.
Yeah, well, and I think there remains a gap in the U.S. marketplace today because our primary care delivery system is so broken that that there's an enormous opportunity for retail in general and drugs specifically to really start to fill that gap. And obviously, you know, CVS and Walgreens have both been leaning in significant ways to take the drugstore format and to tie more traditional primary care options to it as a way to start to really start to plug in to close some of that some of that primary care gap. And Bill, you were talking about healthcare in your initial thoughts, and this kind of will kick us to our sort of next general topic. But what do you think that the retail leaders in drug are prioritizing for 2024 and beyond?
I think they're looking to prioritize anything that supports a healthy lifestyle. So there's a lot of trends around natural continues to be a real focus, plant-based, clean label, sustainable. I think those are the brands that are winning today. And I think retailers are really gravitating towards brands that have a cause-related effect related to the brand as opposed to some of the more traditional brands. Those the smaller, trendier brands seem to be the brands that are gaining market share.
I would also add to that that the brands that can help the drug channel differentiate, bring in an incremental consumer that is valuable, that have a brand story, that can drive demand into the outlet of drug, definitely are winning. And as the drug channels tries to simplify their experience for the consumers, make it easy, make it stress-free, and make it really easy to shop, that's really, really valuable.
And the other thing I would throw on to Sherry's private label, clearly, all three of the drug retailers have made that a priority, have put in their financial reports their desire to grow private label penetration. So I think for branded suppliers, that's going to continue to be a challenge. For private brand suppliers, it's a big opportunity for them because the retailers are really leaning in and looking for more SKUs and ways to grow the private label business.
Yeah, and I think, Bill, one thing that we try to do on our MPG teams is partner with the retailers on private label to help them with our branded items to grow their basket. And retailers obviously are very open to that, and we've had some great successes. Brian, I would say one of the key priorities I've seen is around SKU rationalization, brand rationalization, in addition to a really increased focus on inventory levels, both in the DCs and in the stores, and how that impacts promotions and how that impacts category profitability. So it's been a real challenge across the board and making sure that we're working with the merchandising teams to make sure we have the right levels of inventory to support a BOGO or any type of significant promotion.
Yeah, I think what you're hitting on, and it's a big focus for all of the drug retailers, and it ties together where we started with this conversation when Jason, you were talking about the challenges in this post-COVID world, is how do you manage your cash flow in an environment where trips are inherently more challenged? Because if you think about the 15 to 20% of trips that you get in peak season that were sick folks coming in and they're putting other things in their basket, how do you balance that sort of inherent trip declines that everybody's feeling this year from less acute illness going around with the ability to serve customers with the right level of inventory and have the right amount of cash on the books at a per store level? I think this focus on cash conversion this year, as maybe this year is this bridge year between the getting being really good during COVID and then what the new reality is going to look like. I think everyone's right-sizing a little bit in the context of that environment.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting that we've identified now, if I think about the trends that we've all identified, we've, Sherry, your point about increasing the range of SKUs that create a relationship with a distinctive consumer or a distinctive trip. Bill, your comments around naturals, the build around private label, all of those are SKU expansive, right? And then within that, we've got SKU rationalization as one of the other trends. So what you get to then is a level of precision in category management and drug that needs to be, I think, markedly higher than people assume or that people think. And I know, Luke, when you were at your old employer, one of the things you were really trying to lean in on with suppliers was getting them to get smarter about being able to develop different planograms by different type of store, right? Because that's the only way that you can accomplish those the wide range of objectives that you've got in this mix of things is how do we start to get a little bit more targeted and specific around category management in this? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think space optimization is the key in here. You have to take the linear footage that you have, and you think of that linear footage as both the showroom that a customer comes into and shops, but also the distribution center that allows you to get products into end consumers' hands quickly from a store. And you got to figure out how you optimize and rebalance that. And I think there's a lot of rinse and repeat that has existed in the drug channel for years and years, and those repeats are no longer working. So how do you create room, to Sherry's point, to bring in the new content that customers are looking for? And at the same time, to Jason's point, get rid of some of the things that are no longer productive from a cash conversion perspective. I think that you nailed it, Brian. I mean, that's the juggling act that I think everybody's trying to figure out. And it has to be done at a local level, because those needs and what sells in Des Moines, Iowa is very different than what sells in, you know, suburban Boston. So,
Luke, I think the opportunity for the health and beauty suppliers, you talk about where they're de-emphasizing inventory. I look at massive cuts in seasonal and back to school and some other categories. And so if it is going to be SKU expansive, how we can recapture some of that space, it's very difficult operationally because the adjacencies are not always easy. But I go in stores now, I see end caps with cardboard. I see, you know, the bottom shelves of planograms that, you know, there's signing put in there. So how the health and beauty suppliers can work with the retailers and recapture some of that general merchandise space. Again, back to school seasonal are two great examples where most all of the drug retailers have said, these are not categories where we're going to try and win. Health and beauty is, you know, where we're putting a stake in the ground. And so it actually, to me, there is an opportunity there to kind of repurpose that space.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think part of the challenge you have, and that's why I referred to 24 as maybe a bridge year, is, you know, those things take time. So what ends up happening is folks are putting Band-Aids on things right now. To your example of corrugated cardboard's a great example, to be able to make a different decision that helps improve cash conversion. The right answer in the long term is to reallocate the space at a local level. And so, you know, we did some really interesting things when I was at Walgreens, for example, taking 9-12 feet of space that was no longer productive in the old rinse and repeat scheme and almost putting it up for auction to suppliers and internal folks to say, what can you bring in from a new content perspective that can supplant this content, be much more productive and much more aligned with our vision as a health and well-being retailer? And that worked really well, but it's 9-month, 12-month cycles in some of these cases to actually get that out to every single store. So I do think what you're feeling in the market right now is this awkward in-between period where folks know what the right thing to do is, but the time it takes to do the right thing doesn't necessarily always line up with the financial objectives of the company. So they're trying to find a Band-Aid solution that fills the gap in between.
Right, and still drive sales and share and speak to the consumer, because at the end of the day, it really is about the consumer, and they are changing, and they have changed. That's at a rapid pace change, and what's important today is very different from what was pre-COVID or 5 years ago. So following that consumer is key.
Yeah, and let's flip this conversation a little bit towards the suppliers, because I think we've definitely tackled some of the threats on the front end side in some of the trends and the pieces. But as we now think about the suppliers, one of the conversations we've been having here, sort of implicitly, is that, you know, drug, for all of the, you know, all of the strategy and all of the ways in which it's connecting the consumers in a much more healthcare-centric way. I mean, drug historically for most suppliers has been a highly promotional class of trade, right? I mean, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here when I suggest that promotions have been a big part of how suppliers have come to market here. But just in general, if we wanted to now think about the opportunities and challenges for suppliers in this mix, and Jason, maybe I'll kick this to you first. When you look at some of the what some of the opportunities are for suppliers in drug, as well as what some of the challenges might be, how would you think about a couple of those?
Yeah, I think from a P&L aspect, the high cost to serve in this channel is a significant challenge for our supplier partners. We're sort of trying to take a view of it as how do we partner with the category management teams, the DMMs, to develop a 2 to 3 year roadmap that's going to help us both achieve our mutual goals. I don't think we work with any merchant in the industry that doesn't want to grow their categories and have the best interest of growth in mind. So that is what we really focus on, is how can we create win-win solutions with the merchant teams to drive long-term sustainable growth while bringing them some of the things that we talked about earlier, new items, new brands that are emerging in the marketplace to help them compete in a better way.
I would also add that it's really important for brands to know the retailer and each one of these drug retailers differently. They're very different. And so that too is not a one size fits all. And as they think about their brand story and why they make a difference in the retailer of choice in the market, and then how are they driving brand awareness so that they're driving traffic into these retailers. They have a point of difference. They have differentiation that matters to the consumers. So they're driving brand awareness. Then the retailers can then offer the products, give them accessibility to it, and then they create a winning solution together.
I think the high-low piece, Brian, that you mentioned is really challenged by some of these MAP pricing policies, which kind of handcuffs the drug class of trade from running some aggressive price points they may need to kind of reverse the foot traffic trend. So to me, if I'm a supplier, I'm really focusing on the loyalty programs and how you can overlay, you know, whether it's a buy 30, get 10, whatever it is, and be able to use loyalty cards. Because if there's one competitive advantage the drug has, they're well further advanced than, you know, most other classes of trade or other retailers in terms of how they're leveraging their loyalty program. So, you know, when they put together that high-low strategy, the role that the loyalty programs play is critical.
Yeah, can I just add to that, Bill? And it's not just in promo, it's the data. Like digging into that data to really understand who's buying the product, who isn't. Are you leaking somewhere that you shouldn't be? Where are your repeat? How big is the basket? The demographics around that basket? All of the data that then leads to the promotion is critical.
I think, yeah, I was glass half empty earlier when I started. My glass half full on the opportunity here for suppliers is playing on why the glass is half empty, which is it's a challenging environment for drug retailers in the context of cough, cold, COVID, and the like. A much lower cough, cold season, certainly than last year, but I think also than what everybody was forecasting. And so the opportunity for me for suppliers is, how do you bring customer-centric sales to the equation? And I think retailers are more open to that conversation of putting a floor stand in when it's the right item and the right product, bringing something in and putting it on the front counter. I think the willingness to listen to sales-driving, customer-centric ideas and opportunities is much higher now than it probably was 2 years ago when everyone was riding the wave still. So to me, that's a huge opportunity. I always tell suppliers, don't be afraid to ask, because I think you would be surprised when you bring ideas that can drive profitable sales, how often the answer might be yes. And I think sometimes the conversation just devolves into financial cost of goods, all that fun stuff. Bringing customer-centric sales ideas, retailers are very, very open to those right now.
The one thing I always appreciated was insights that were A, data-driven or customer-driven. And so those are when you can have insights that then lead to bigger ideas and then can shape the future strategies, it's really meaningful. And that's really how some of the new programming is working. Like that's how future strategies get built and part of the ongoing portion of change, because consumer is changing. So the retailers need to change with the consumers.
Right. Well, I think we've used the concept of, we've used the concept like muscle memory a couple of times to talk about this class of trade, whether it's habit or the kind of the rhythm of business planning. And I really do think, you know, I think COVID gave everybody a chance to kind of plan this channel a little bit differently, because for a couple of years, the highly promotional nature of how business was planned in this class of trade got blown up because you really couldn't do that during COVID. My fear right now, to be honest, is that because a lot of the people on the brand side that are working on the drug channel have been doing it for a long time, they're going back to what they know how to do, which is to run a very high variance, high low, BOGO driven sort of promotional strategy and build to the point that you made around MAP earlier. I think this is a huge one, because right now, most of the brands in the world have somebody running around with a title like director of RGM that's trying to take all these programs out and drown them in a river somewhere. Because the disruptiveness of those types of programs in the broader marketplace is really hard to manage. If somebody can go into any class of trade, buy something on a BOGO, put it on Amazon's third-party marketplace at markedly lower than your retail price and win the buy button, I've caused myself now a month of disruption in my online pricing ecosystem that takes me a lot of money to unwind and fix. So I think I think to the point that somebody made earlier around using the loyalty cards as a way to do this, I think a big part of this is how much of my pricing can I get out of the public domain, and how much of my promotional strategy can I get targeted against people that aren't trying to rebuy the product to sell it, but they're trying to rebuy the product to use it. Because that's going to be a big piece of managing promotional retail in the U.S. A lot of that is around managing the downstream effect of promotions and what happens in a world where retail pricing can get discombobulated by third parties. So this is a huge part of this.
And we've done a lot of work, Brian, around, you know, Bill mentioned MAP policy. I'll take it a step deeper. Like, what is a true drug strategy for manufacturers in order to win? And we've been fielding a lot of questions, and we've used our consulting team to help build out revised new drug strategies for some of our core partners, and hopefully that helps lead to longer term sustainable growth as we go into 25 and 26.
Yeah, and that actually opens up our next question, which are what do you think the one or two thing brands really need to do to succeed in this class of trade? Like what are our tips to the brands out there? I think revisiting drug channel strategy in a post-COVID landscape would be a worthwhile thing for any business that relies on drug for a significant percentage of its volume. I think the nature of this channel has pretty fundamentally changed in the post-COVID world, maybe more than any.
Yeah, I think one thing, you know, and Luke did an outstanding job at Walgreens in the paper category, is understanding the demographics and then targeting the doors needed to serve those demographics to drive your category, and that's something I know the category managers want to see all the time. Like, where is this brand going to sell, and where is it going to sell at the highest velocity?
Well, and Sherry, this was your point earlier on the data, right? Like, really getting in and
right, absolutely. That data is critical, and just the one size fits all. It doesn't work. And that's not the way the consumer shops. There's a much broader range of consumer demographic, to Jason's point. And understanding who shops, where they shop, what is it that is most meaningful to them in an environment. And really what you're seeing these retailers do is make more conscious decisions and being more deliberate about what they're putting on their shelves, how they're marketing it, and the whole demand cycle. And just the brands really do need to understand the expectations of the retailers as well. While it might sound like it's a great idea to go into 8,000 stores, it most likely does not match your brand demographic or success profile. So just understanding that data and make really choiceful decisions about where you're putting your brand, how you're driving the demand in, and then helping the retailer drive it through. because at the end of the day, that's what matters in the end is the sales and share and making that profit because of product terms, not because of funding.
Yeah, just to build on what Sherry said, and Jason, you've heard me say this before to suppliers, and Sherry, it's exactly what you're saying. Points of distribution aren't king here. Inventory turns are king. And so suppliers need to stop. I think historically they've been fixated on drug because it's 8,000, 9,000 for some of the larger retailers, points of distribution, and they want to be in every single door. And actually that exacerbates this cash flow problem because they probably only should be in 4,000 doors. And they should probably be carrying 2-3x the depth in those doors instead of trying to peanut butter the inventory across. And it creates a double pronged problem, which is A, you can't carry enough inventory in the stores where it matters because you're mindful of the full cash situation. And B, 6 months down the line, you're riddled with excess inventory in stores where we knew analytically it was never going to sell to begin with. So to tie back to the question, suppliers who are focused on turning product, not focused on getting product in every single door, that's a huge win for drug retailers right now.
Yeah, and that's, and I think that's really it, because I think if you don't have a sales related reason for being on the shelf, then the only economic reason you have to be there is because you bought your way there. So, and this is one of the reasons why drug ends up being an expensive class of trade for brands. Because you, to the point we've made a couple of times here, you look at the points of distribution, you look at how brands measure distribution goals, which is like for a new item launch, I've got to get to 90% of ACV from a new item launch distribution point of view. Well, if I got to get to 90% of ACV, I got to get the product on shelf and drug because they've got so many doors. I end up trying to create an economic situation for the retailer that works to put this product on 9,000 shelves when it may really only belong on 4,000. And now I've got the supplier thinking the class of trade is expensive, the retailer having to get the stuff off of 5,000 shelves because it's not selling. And this is where the mess comes in when this class of trade becomes more of a points of distribution game and less of a points of selling game. So, when the relationship is very buy driven, not sell driven.
Yeah, and it's playing the quarter game instead of the 18-month, two-year game. And so what happens is the points of distribution are nice because it means more shipments on the first day the product launches or the first day that it launches within the store. The unfortunate reality of it, if it means, is economically, a lot of these deals have guaranteed sales and buyback and call-ins on the back end. And so for the 5,000 stores that didn't sell in, the supplier is taking it on the chin anyway on the back end of this thing. So it's just thinking through the economics in a longer time horizon instead of being fixated on how do I get the next quarter shipments where I want them to be, because that game will never work in the long run.
Right. And then on top of that, like, what is having a short-term plan and the long-term plan? What is it ultimately that you want your brand to be a year from now, 2 years from now, and what's going to drive that growth? And innovation comes into play, the shopper comes into play, and the retailer. So you really have to think about that holistically.
Right. And as we think about this conversation that brands are having, how do we think about this in terms of a large brand versus a small to medium-sized brand? Do you think that there are differences that the large brands need to keep in mind versus a smaller or medium-sized one?
I think the role is different, right? A large brand will spend an awful lot of money in marketing, and they drive demand holistically. And so their role is a bit different than a smaller brand that is unique, different, very nimble. And so I believe that their role is very different in terms of a retailer and how they manage through that. The expectations are a bit different as well. Sales versus profitability, consumer, and all of that.
I would say as a retailer, it's difficult to manage a large number of small suppliers. But at the end of the day, typically the profitability, the margins are higher from some of the smaller suppliers. Sometimes the contribution in terms of the trade funding that they provide is very often, again, as a percent total, higher than some of the larger suppliers. So I think there's a lot of value in leaning in with the smaller suppliers. And even though it creates a different level of complexity to the category managers in terms of, you know, again, their supplier base and all the challenges that come with that.
And I think too, if you can work with that supplier to create marketing efforts to drive brand awareness that may be specific to a specific retailer, CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, it can really help drive people into your stores to pick up the item.
To tie back to the conversation we were just having on points of distribution, there's a little bit of a dichotomy that lives in here that I think is an ongoing challenge, which is often the larger suppliers are less obsessed with points of distribution because they've got big brands, they play across a vast array of channels, they drive a lot of volume, maybe even through their own direct-to-consumer e-commerce. The smaller brands tend to be the ones most obsessed with points of distribution because they need those shipments early on to make the economics work. So there's a little bit of a dichotomy living in here where I would say there's a huge role to play for the small to medium-sized brands.
Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, if only there were a company that helped brands navigate this. And helped both small brands figure out exactly how to come to market in that space and help the big brands sort of sort that out. I guess let's we're going to get close to the end of our time here, and I do want to round out with two last sort of thematic questions here. One of which, and we've alluded to this a couple of different times today, but as we really get sort of, if we think about assortment, promotion, loyalty, pricing strategy, if each one of you had like one piece of advice for brands and brand teams that are looking to manage that, the real nuts and bolts of managing the drug channel today that we haven't talked about today, what would one of those thoughts be?
The one thing I would say is be a student of the business and really understand not just the shopper, but the whole dynamics. And it's not just US, like what are the trends? Help the retailer understand what's happening in the market. A lot of times we counted on the suppliers to educate us if it was a two-way street, right? And so that we could tell them what we were looking to do, but it was never finite. And when you can be a student and continue to learn, the consumers are definitely changing, and we all need to change with them to serve them better. And when you can really understand what's happening in the market with the consumer, with the retailer, building that holistic winning plan together, that definitely is something I would say. And in addition to the fact that make sure that it's custom by retailer, custom by shopper.
Yeah, to me, it's meaningful innovation that's going to be incremental to the basket that's going to keep the consumers loyal to the brand. So that to me is really what's key for success.
Bill?
I would go back to the way we started, glass half full, glass half empty. To the glass empty suppliers, they're in some instances looking at drug and saying it's an expensive class of trade. How do I pull back on resources? How do I reallocate those resources? But there are others that creates a huge opportunity for. And if drug is a class of trade you're all in on, I'd make sure the retailers understand that. You be very forthright, and I'm here to win in drug in the long term.
Agree with everything that Bill just said. I think being scrappy is the key here. If suppliers want and brands want to shift the narrative away from a financial-centric conversation back to a customer-centric conversation, bringing ideas and being scrappy and not being overly obsessed with rinsing and repeating the prior year's plan, but being overly obsessed with how do we change things up to get more items into baskets, get more customers into doors, have to be scrappy right now, in my opinion, more than anything else.
Yeah. And I know we're getting close to time, but if everybody has one more minute, because we haven't really talked about traditional versus digital yet, and I do want to cover that before we go. With no disrespect to anybody's former employer here, the dot-com side of the drug business is not as big as it is in other classes of trade, just from a sheer volume point of view, for a number of reasons. you know, nature of trip, age of target demographic. There's a bunch of reasons why e-commerce and drug is a smaller percentage of the business here. That's cool. You've also got certainly CVS and Walgreens playing heavily in the retail media space right now and trying to create new touch points and new outreaches to consumers. How should brands be thinking about the digital ecosystem in drug versus just the physical store?
They have to think about the 9,000, 5,000, 7,000, whatever the drug chains points of distribution are, as mini distribution centers, not as just stores. And the only way drug unlocks digital and omni sales in the future is if it can weaponize those locations to have a strategic advantage over retailers who maybe are 20-minute drive away. So to me, it's less about thinking in the traditional direct-to-consumer e-commerce sense and more thinking about wiring all of the digital activities around the points of distribution advantages that drug has.
And I would also say, while drug is certainly underdeveloped in comparison to others because it's an in-store trip that drives that consumer, it still has to be part of the journey because the consumers are still using digital online as research tools, as for a lot of educational types of things. And there's a fair amount of younger consumers that would prefer to buy online. So serving consumers where they are, it definitely needs to be something that is top of mind because it's the future, it's here. And it, as part of that planning, it needs to be holistic as part of your brand plan.
And I'll add one last thought on that, which is I think from a retail media point of view, I think drugs got a unique right to win in the retail media space in a couple of different ways. I think its audience is fairly distinctive, particularly when you look at the urban audience that drug can reach. The urban shopper is not the easiest shopper in the world to reach from a media point of view, sometimes particularly a retail media point of view. Most of urban retail in the United States isn't served by a large-scale organized retail like grocery and mass. Drugs really your one route in there from a media point of view. So I think it's a completely under-leveraged opportunity from an urban marketing point of view to reach younger shoppers who are using the drug channel as a convenience channel and to reach them in some really interesting ways. I also think that the thing everybody always misses with drug and retail media is that the opportunity for drug to monetize its media platforms through the enormous amount of money spent on pharmaceutical marketing is insane. So I mean, the pharma industry spends 2x what the CPG industry does on marketing and advertising. So I do think that this is going to be an increasingly important revenue stream for drug, and as such, should be a part of the planning process. And three, just a full shout out to the CVS Media Exchange and the Walgreens advertising people. You've got smart people there that are really trying to figure this out. So people will look at drugs sometimes and go, oh good, more money to spend. But I think properly evaluated, I think there's some really interesting media opportunities within the digital world of drug as well. So, all right. Any last thoughts from anybody before we wrap up here?
Well, Brian, I appreciate you hosting some good dialogue and, I think we all remain very bullish on the drug channel and where it's going, and there's some great opportunities out there with the number of doors that you can access through the channel.
Yeah, and obviously for those of you listening and who want more guidance on how MPG can help develop the drug class of trade for you, you can reach out to any of the people on this podcast who would be more than willing to help. So Jason, Sherry, Bill, Luke. Thank you all very much for your time and your time today and your perspective. And this is a really unique opportunity for me. I learned a ton from listening to people who have been doing this successfully for as long as you guys have. So thank you very much for your time. And on behalf of MPG, signing off this MPG Path Forward podcast. Hope you enjoy the listen. If you have any feedback, please shoot it to me or the MPG team directly. Thanks and have a great day.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.